will be in the case of Friends of Toohey versus Toohey Homeowners Association, docket 18-4065. Counsel, we're ready for your argument.
Good morning, judges.
Good morning.
Your honors, if it may please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes as well at the end of my argument for rebuttal. Judges, this is another summary judgment appeal. What we're asking you to do in this case is reverse the district court's order granting summary judgment in favor of the defendant. Excuse me. And there was a series of orders also entered in connection with this summary judgment order, those being an order concerning damages and fees, an order concerning a motion to strike slash a summary judgment exhibit objection, as well as the ultimate civil judgment that was created in connection with the order. Judges, before I get into the substance of the summary judgment motion, I want to talk a minute about the civil judgment, because it's pretty much the easiest issue to resolve. There was an intervening party in the case, JRAT Investments, and the court was very clear in its memorandum and judgment that it was not rendering any issue or any opinion whatsoever concerning JRAT and the $120,000 being held as an escrow withhold. I can quote the specific language, page 2 of the judgment. JRAT, which intervened, blah, blah, blah. These stated claims bind against JRAT were not raised in the motion and are not resolved by this memorandum of decision. The district court goes on to repeat that at page 23 with similar language. Not adjudicated, not addressed, not brought up, so on and so forth, Your Honors. Notwithstanding that, after this judgment was issued, the HOA and JRAT submitted a stipulation and order that judgment be entered in favor of the HOA as against JRAT for the $120,000. It's roughly $116,000. That money was ours, so they had no authority to enter any kind of stipulation concerning those funds.
Well, it was yours depending on the effect of the lien and the foreclosure and everything else.
Correct, Your Honor, as it relates to 8 lots, though. Remember,
two lots we're talking about now, isn't it?
Right, but the money covered all 8 lots. And the 6 lots that JRAT was involved with were unequivocally not subject to the summary judgment proceedings. So that's why the judgment was just completely erroneous. The district court itself said, I'm not going to touch those funds. It even described it as the funds it wasn't going to touch, not just the claims that relates to JRAT. So the point being is JRAT and the HOA submitted a stipulation after the summary judgment motion that those funds be awarded to the HOA. They had no authority to do it. It was a fugitive stip. The district court itself said, I'm not going to enter any ruling relative to those funds or those issues. And then in the ultimate civil judgment, it granted HOA $116,000, that specific $116,000, which are, again, funds my client put up in escrow to secure, not just the 2 lots, Your Honor, I appreciate you bringing that up, all 8 lots. So I don't think there's any question here that the civil judgment, as it relates to that issue specifically, needs to be reversed.
Well, you don't think that the 6 lots that JRAT, they own those lots, correct?
Correct. They bought them.
They bought them subject to. And so why wouldn't they get the money attributable to what was put up to cover the liens at that point?
The claim survived against us, Your Honor. We put up the money, not JRAT. We put up the entire $166,000. Right. So in other words, the claim survived. It was just almost like putting up a bond.
It just hasn't been adjudicated.
Correct.
Okay.
And not only were the issues never adjudicated, but they didn't even ask for summary judgment on those 6 lots. And the district court was very clear in its judgment, I'm not touching those 6 lots. I think I've beat a dead horse on that issue now. So initially, as it relates to that issue specifically, the civil judgment, should be overturned or reversed.
Well, JRAT's not a party, though.
Well, they were dismissed. They were an intervening party.
Yeah, and they settled their case.
Correct.
And so your claim is whatever it's for against the Homeowners Association.
Well, they had claims against the HOA and us. They counterclaimed against us. They even brought in my principal and sued him for fraud. All those claims were resolved. They just dismissed them in connection with the lawsuit going away. The only issue I have is they entered into that stipulation on those funds. They had no right. They want their funds to stipulate away. And more importantly, the HOA never adjudicated the funds.
Okay.
They never asked for summary judgment on them. They never disclosed any evidence in connection with them. They just slipped a stipulation and order in after the MSJ came down. And the district court never signed the stip and order, but included that award in the civil judgment. So next, Your Honor, getting to the summary judgment order, we've made several different objections to the evidence presented in this case. First and foremost, the discovery cutoff in this case was in August of 2016. 16. I might get the date wrong here, Your Honor. I apologize. At that time, no disclosures had been made by the HOA. Not the initial disclosures, no supplements, nothing. I brought that to the HOA's attention, and there was kind of this tentative informal agreement where we would extend discovery, reopen it. JRAD had just intervened. I thought it was going to happen anyway. And we can make disclosures, continue with the case, and we can go, move on from there. Well, they made some disclosures in the case after that. So we're months past the discovery cutoff, and then reneged on the deal and refiled the motion immediately. But that's not really my issue. The ultimate issue is the judge granted judgment in favor of the HOA relative to the two lots based on disclosures that were made months, even months after that, in connection with a damage motion practice, months after judgment was entered on the summary judgment motion. So not only was the, and the evidence that the court considered in connection with awarding him damages, the HOA introduced Jessica Layton. She was a witness that had never been disclosed, including wasn't disclosed in the late disclosure, and also introduced a number of internally generated invoices, you know, that were attached to Ms. Layton's affidavit that once again had never been disclosed in the case. So my client, you know, was trying to participate in discovery in good faith, had made two timely disclosures, noticed two 30B6 depositions of the HOA, both of which covering all these issues. We deposed the gentleman who was the maintenance manager for the HOA.
Well, excuse me just a minute. I was under the impression that the court did not strike the late disclosures on either side and didn't use the evidence in arriving at its decision on summary judgment.
Well, that's a tricky question. The court did deny the motion to strike and said that, because we made an untimely disclosure at the same time they did.
Right.
Did disclose those documents. Did say that there was relied on some agreement that we had made and said it was equitable. Said you guys both made late disclosures, so I'm gonna deny both.
But didn't he also say that he wasn't gonna rely on any of the evidence?
Right.
That had been disclosed
late. Well, that's not what the judge ruled. If you read the decision, he said it was equitable. There was an agreement, and I can't remember.
All right, well, that's right. We'll find it.
But more importantly, Your Honor, I'm glad you brought that up because it's kind of a tricky issue. That's not why the judgment should be reviewed. It's one reason, one just basis for sure. But the evidence the district court ultimately considered had nothing to do with that evidence.
Well, I want to find out, before we get to collateral issues, what there is in the agreement that you say did not bind you.
The CC&Rs.
The what?
By agreement, Your Honor, I apologize.
Yeah, with Homeowners Association.
Okay, thank you, yeah.
It looks pretty clear that it says anybody that owns property in here is subject to HOA covenants, et cetera.
Okay, and I can see you taking that position, Your Honor. I don't think it's completely unreasonable. I do think it's ambiguous. And the reason I think it's ambiguous
is... How is it ambiguous?
Well, Your Honor, the CC&Rs are very clear that the owner of a lot or a parcel... My client's a developer. My client bought a plat.
It still owned the lot.
Okay, Your Honor, then the parties...
Did he have a sub-agreement with the Homeowners Association that they would be exempt from anything?
It didn't, but that was the course of practice. You got to take in context the time we're talking about here. We had an unprecedented real estate collapse. You know, when you usually have a master plan community and you have these various developers come in that are going to develop small aspects of the community, they're not subject to the assessments. They're not members of the community. They don't benefit from the
swimming
pool.
I don't know that. If there's an agreement that says they are, they are.
But it wasn't enforced or performed that way, Your Honor. And let me give you...
Do you have evidence in the record to that effect?
Absolutely. They're 30B6 admitted under oath. We never assessed them. And if you read 7.5, the article the HOA relies on...
They never assessed them until they got into a jam.
No. They never assessed them monthly assessments. You just mentioned the CC&Rs govern my client as a quote-unquote owner. Well, if that's the case, the minute they bought property, they should have been paying these monthly assessments.
Okay.
For 12, 13, 14, 15 years, they never assessed them. It wasn't until this contentious dispute arose between the principal of my client and the principal of the master community, which the HOA did not dispute, Your Honors, that they began harassing my client and retaliating, specifically.
So what was the level of development in this community at the time your client started getting these notices and assessments?
With my client's development or with the master community?
With the master community.
As I understand it, the FDIC came in, both the master and my client went into default. The FDIC came in and froze everything.
Right, but were there a lot of houses out there already?
Sure.
I mean, because your client's situation is sort of the, in a community that's partially built is the nightmare of an HOA, right?
Well, I think the distinction is, Your Honors, is this is a summary judgment hearing. We presented not only undisputed evidence, evidence that was flat ignored. The district court emphasized the fact that we weren't participating in this quote-unquote nuisance abatement process. We submitted a letter directly responding. Everything the district court said we didn't do, and it's at Volume 2 of our appendix, 434 through 35. It was a September 21st letter. We specifically addressed the HOA's, you know, matter all of a sudden after 8 years. Okay, we find these lots to be, nuisances. We find them to be unsafe. You need to do something. And we played along. We said, we don't think you have the authority to come in and touch our property, but we're going to do what it takes to maintain this relationship.
Are you talking about a 3-foot fence?
No, Your Honor. We offered to do everything they ended up doing. We offered to put up a landscape berm, a fence around it that was exactly the same way as the fence around their master recreation.
Part of the concern by one of the neighbors is, I have young boys, and talk about an attractive nuisance. You've got all of those holes in the ground with cement and skateboards and bikes.
Right.
I assume. That's a reasonable position, right?
You'd well, of course, sir.
For your children.
The only comment I'll make on that is it came up again at the 11th hour, and the second comment I'll make is we absolutely offered to address that free of charge.
The 11th hour, though, this sat like this for years. And nothing happened.
No, that's my point. It sat like that for years. All of a sudden, it became unsafe when the principal of the master got into a beef with my client.
I don't know. Maybe the landowner's children were now of an age where that became a concern. But in any event, it's not really much of a defense to say we've got this dangerous situation out there, but nobody said anything about it, so we should be able to keep dangerous situation.
I hear you, Your Honor, and I think a more responsible response to your question would be we offer to deal with that potential danger. We offer to do it at no cost to the HOA. They said no, and the reason they said no was they were just retaliating. You got to understand the principal was controlling this HOA still. It was a declarant controlled HOA. They hadn't gone out of the statutory declarant control period yet. So it's this guy, essentially master or puppet, saying no, you're not going to do that. We're going to do this. You're not complying with ARC guidelines. Well, when I had the 30B6 deponent designee, I was asking her questions. I said, tell me how our proposals violated your ARC guidelines. She couldn't do it.
Well, the reason they have those covenants against, and you agree, don't you, that your clients partially built lots were in violation of the covenants at that point, don't you?
No, not at all, Your Honor. So you think
under the covenants that you had out there, you could build some foundations and let them sit for many years?
No. I'm sorry, it's a different question. I thought you asked if the foundations themselves were in some violated some covenant.
Right. No, I mean there's an expectation in these developments that you're going to proceed diligently and get the properties built.
Of course.
Because if you don't, if you have all these partially built lots sitting out there for 8 years, then the other lot owners and the other homeowners have to the presumption is they're suffering some kind of devaluation of their own property because of your partially built lots.
I understand that, Your Honor, and my response would be there was an unprecedented real estate collapse at the time that nobody could predict it. My client, as soon as the FDIC freeze came up, we sold the properties to JRAT. The two final properties are in the development stage as we speak. I see I'm in a minute 45. I should sit down, probably.
You can reserve your time if you'd like. Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, I'm Doug Shumway representing Tuhei Homeowners Association. I'll refer to them as the HOA, as this court has. I'd like to respond to some of Friends of Tuhei's arguments in the order that they brought them up, in the order that this court has asked some questions. If you turn to Volume 2, 00646, that's the stipulated judgment with JRAT. At no time did the HOA and JRAT stipulate to get money out of escrow. We did not stipulate to get that money. What the HOA stipulated to is the parties stipulate that JRAT will not interfere with the HOA's efforts to attach and execute on the escrow funds to satisfy the judgment. Secondly, the parties stipulate that the HOA shall endeavor in good faith to first satisfy the judgment by seeking the release of the escrow funds.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The parties stipulated the HOA would endeavor in good faith to satisfy the judgment by seeking the release of the escrow funds. In essence, Your Honors, the HOA and JRAT understood that this money was in escrow, that JRAT and the HOA couldn't just stipulate to get that money out. But what they stipulated to was JRAT wouldn't get in the way of the HOA trying to attach through writ of attachment or otherwise, writ of execution, on that money. So what ended up happening after the stipulation is the HOA worked with the title company, and the title company released that money based on the stipulated judgment that the district court then entered. It's also interesting...
Wait, excuse me.
Yes.
The stipulated judgment between JRAT and HOA?
Correct.
You just said that they didn't agree, nobody agreed, that they could take the money out of escrow.
Well, no, the argument from Friends of 2A was that the HOA and JRAT could not contract to get Friends of 2A's money. That wasn't what they contracted
to do. But they did.
They got the money. They got the money, but not because of the, not by the stipulation. In other words, Friends of 2A and the HOA negotiated that the HOA could go ahead and do what it needed to do to try to execute on the stipulated judgment and get access to the money. But at no time did they stipulate, in other words, JRAT didn't say, this money is yours.
Okay.
Right. Now,
are you saying that Friends agreed with HOA that they would get the money?
Not Friends of 2A, sorry, JRAT. JRAT and the HOA, they stipulated together that the HOA could, on its own, contact the title company, work with the title company to try to get that money to satisfy this stipulated judgment.
And did the Friends know that that was going on, and did they have an opportunity to come in and object to it?
They certainly did, Your Honor. Okay. And my understanding, and this isn't in the record, but I better not, but I will say that they were aware.
But is that part of this summary judgment?
It is not.
What are we talking about it for?
I believe Friends of 2A is just appealing everything that the district court decided in favor of the Homeowners Association. But
if it didn't decide anything, there's nothing to decide.
Well, Your Honor, you bring up a very important point, is that the HOA and JRAT submitted the stipulated judgment and a proposed order for the judge to sign. Friends of 2A never objected to that. So I believe there's a preservation argument here. At no time, they saw the filing, they saw the document, they saw the words talking about escrow funds.
They get served with the proposal?
They got served through the electronic filing system. They got served with everything. At no time did they object to it. They didn't object when they knew that Friends of Two or the HOA was working with the title company to access those funds. They didn't intervene and try to stop that. Only after the district court merged the stipulated judgment with the other damages in its final judgment and order, only then did Friends of 2A never objected. They just appealed it. So there is no objection on the record from Friends of 2A regarding the stipulated judgment. Regarding evidence of the disclosures, Judge Phillips, I think you glommed onto this idea that the district court found that the disclosures were made timely because they were made by stipulation. The Homeowners Association did, in fact, make its first disclosure during Trish Waterman's deposition. She's a 30B6 deponent in January of 2016, 1 year before the HOA made its formal 26A disclosure. During that deposition, and it's in the record, Friends of 2A handed me their 26A disclosures during the deposition. And in return, we handed Friends of 2A a stack of documents, ledgers, invoices, meeting minutes from the HOA board, etc. So for Friends of 2A to argue that they had no idea about these records, that they never received anything in any disclosure, is not accurate.
Were there any motions to compel or anything of that sort filed around the time you're talking about?
There were not, Your Honor. Neither was there a 56D in response to the HOA's motion for summary judgment. If a party genuinely believes that they are surprised by new evidence that hadn't been disclosed before and all of a sudden they have to deal with it, the proper avenue is to file a 56D and request time to conduct fact discovery on that, rather than just merely object, 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 I am harmed, but do nothing to try to actually vet the new evidence that has come out. At no time was a 56D filed by Friends of 2A, neither in response to the motion for summary judgment or in response to the HOA's motion for adjudication of damages, where, yes, an affidavit of a new person was submitted because that was the new bookkeeper at the time. Trish Waterman was the bookkeeper in 2016, and Jessica Layton was the bookkeeper in 2017 at the time that the motion for adjudication of damages was presented. But, Your Honors, with regard to the CC&Rs, I'd like to respond to that issue. Judge Kelly, you're absolutely right that there is nothing in the document, there's nothing in the contract that exempts Friends of Touhey LLC. In fact, Friends of Touhey LLC isn't mentioned in the entire document. The only exemption for assessments is for the declarant.
For the what?
For the declarant, the developer of the property. And on page one of the CC&Rs, it defines declarant as Touhey LLC. That's the LLC company of the master developer, the master builder. The master HOA is responsible for maintaining the roads, etc. And Friends of Touhey was a sub-developer. They created a sub-association within the master plan community. Now,
did they argue a course of dealing as a defense here?
I don't believe the course of dealing is a defense, Your Honor, because
no,
that
argument... did they argue? Did they raise it?
They mention it. They mention it, but I don't believe it is an actual defense in the case, Your Honor, because Friends of Touhey was the plaintiff. But an argument of course of dealing goes towards their claim for breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. In the HOA's reply brief, though, we cite to the case of Oakwood Village, which specifically says that Utah law is, if you are going to have a breach of covenant of good faith and fair dealing claim, you first must have a breach of contract claim. There is no provision of the CC&Rs that Friends of Touhey can point to that the HOA has violated. The HOA has not violated any of the provisions. Therefore, to have a breach of covenant of good faith fair dealing claim, you just can't, you cannot connect those dots.
Well, it all depends how you read it, right? Because when I read the covenants, I think nobody ever foresaw the 2008 collapse, and so no one thought that there were going to be lots undeveloped just lingering for years. And now we're all trying to force that situation into this language. And as Judge Kelly notes, if you own a lot, you're due assessments. But, big fact, you never sought any assessments on the undeveloped lots. And so that makes me wonder if the intent of everything was you have to at least put up a structure, and then you have a reason to be paying the assessment. If your neighbor's weeds are 6 feet tall, it affects your property value. But if you just have undeveloped land, you don't really care if someone has 6 feet. Foot weeds, at least until you build a house. And so tell me how we deal with that fact. You never issued an assessment for years.
Well, Your Honor, that's your point is well taken, that under the CC&Rs, there are several different types of assessments that can be made. The annual assessment are charged to homeowners who are, to contribute to the roads and the other maintenance responsibility of the Master Association.
And were they assessed during this whole period?
My understanding is that there was a gentleman's agreement between the Master HOA and the sub-association. Not the sub-association, but with Christopher Holmes, Friends of Touhey LLC, that they wouldn't need to pay the annual assessment while they were in construction. However, we're not talking about the annual assessment here, Your Honors. We are talking about the nuisance ability, the ability to abate a nuisance.
But they're joined at the hip by this language in 7.5. The end of that paragraph says, the cost thereof shall be added to and become a part of the assessment to which the offending owner and the owner's lot or parcel is subject and shall be secured by the agreement lien. So you got one picture. Might be pouring two things into it, but it's one picture.
Well, Your Honor, added to, together with, 1 + 0 does not equal zero. If you're not charging the assessments, but there is a nuisance and you can fine for the nuisance, that's the 1 + 0, it equals 1. To say that because we aren't charged assessments, we don't have to abide by the nuisance provisions, we don't have to abide by any of the other restrictions on the property, That would effectively render the purpose of these CC&Rs null and void. They are covenants, conditions, and restrictions. That would mean a nuisance could be provided on a lot. A homeowner who complains about an attractive nuisance for their sons, Friends of Tuhay could say, well, because you're not charging me assessments, sorry, I can leave this nuisance up. Well, because your CCNRs don't apply.
What Friends would say is, next time, draw better covenants. Contemplate something like this happening. But when you miss the ball, don't expect the court to jam your situation into this language.
I don't believe the ball has been missed at all, Your Honor. I think the language is pretty clear. That the assessments, capital A, is defined as the assessments that the Master Association charges. But then you have nuisances. And if there is a nuisance, the HOA can abate that nuisance. If the homeowner refuses to abate it, they can fine that owner. And if the owner refuses to pay the fine or the charges to abate the nuisance, that will be added to any assessments that may exist. If there aren't any assessments, though, you can still charge them through the same vehicle. It's a lien upon the property for failure to pay. So I don't believe that they are tied at the hip. I don't believe they are exclusive of each other, that if you don't have assessments, you don't get to abate the nuisance and assess for those charges.
Is there any provision in the covenants that says that the failure of the HOA to enforce provisions of the covenants does not operate as a waiver of future enforcement of those?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor.
Okay.
As to the... I addressed that. Okay. All right, well, just a couple of points, Your Honor, that I'd like to make. That with regard to the calculation of damages, the only objection that Friends of Tuhay makes to the substance of the HOA's documents representing their damages, their ledgers, their liens, their demand letters, the only substantive objection is that the ledgers that were finally utilized by the court, finally reviewed, and that contain the calculation of damages differ than the deposition testimony of Steve Savinsky, the maintenance man. But if the court would turn its attention to Volume 1002 of the record, that is the 30B6 notice for deposition. The only questions that were being asked in that deposition were regarding filling the concrete foundations with dirt. There is no question about the cost to the HOA or the fine amounts, etc. So when Steve Savinsky was deposed, Friends of Tuhay asked him the question, how much do you get paid per hour and how many hours did it take you and your crew to backfill? From that, Friends of Tuhay alone, not from Steve Savinsky, but Friends of Tuhay did the calculation and put the calculation in their briefing saying, aha, that's the real amount. When in reality, Steve Savinsky is just the maintenance guy. He's not the bookkeeper. He doesn't do the invoicing. He doesn't do the calculations. In fact, Friends of Tuhay had the opportunity to ask questions of the person most knowledgeable, Trish Waterman.
Did Friends agree to the district court's determining damages based on a reply from HOA and a surreply from Friends with accompanying materials?
It did, Your Honor. And that's the crux of my argument today is that in every disclosure that was made, there was a stipulation from Friends of Tuhay. It stipulated to the 20B6 or 26A disclosure in January of 2017, and it stipulated to additional material being submitted in response to the damages. And that, I would just like to read briefly from counsel from Friends of Tuhay what he said to the court. When the court realized that it was faced with a factual determination, it realized it wanted additional information from the HOA. It wanted information about how interest was calculated and how money related to the dirt being filled. The district court said, well, I'm inclined to let the HOA do a beefed up reply and supply this information. Counsel for Friends of Tuhay said, quote, if I have a chance to file a surreply, he can put all the affidavits and things like that he needs in his reply, and it will basically be a summary judgment kind of scenario. 1 minute later, he reiterated, I don't mind the idea of him doing a reply and me doing a surreply, and he can attach whatever, summary judgment type of sworn testimony that he would need to provide, and then I can respond to that in a surreply. Rule 26A and 26E allow for disclosures either by stipulation or by order of the court. The 26A disclosure, the original one in January of 2017, was done by stipulation. Friends of 2A allowed the HOA to make those disclosures. Then it filed the motion for summary judgment, again, with no 56D.
You're over time, so we need you to wrap up, if you would, please.
Oh, I am. I apologize. And then just the last one, by stipulation, the court asked for additional information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you add a minute? Again, Your Honor, so we're fair.
Just to address the last point counsel was arguing about, we never stipulated to any untimely disclosures. The context into which the HOA described the deposition handoff, we formally provided them with Rule 26 initial disclosures, and they signed or received a copy, as you would do pursuant to the rules. His deponent handed me a stack of documents, which she admitted under oath were just some of the documents she felt to be relevant. These documents were never explained to me to be disclosures. They weren't even made exhibits to the deposition. In fact, tellingly, Your Honor, there were several different scheduling orders and joint attorney status reports filed after that date where counsel specifically signed and said, yeah, we haven't made our initial disclosures yet. They're forthcoming.
Well, counsel, did you agree that the district court could determine damages based on the reply, the HOA, and a surreply from you?
Absolutely not, Judge. And I think that's
three appellants of App 797.
The context in which counsel is describing is I knew they hadn't disclosed any evidence. I brought that up at the status conference and said, Your Honor, there's no admissible evidence. They've disclosed no evidence. The judge agreed with me and said, you know what, I'm going to let him do what he can do in the reply, and you can follow a surreply. I said, let him do what he's going to do in the reply. That's the context in which that came up. And then I made the same objection in my surreply.
You didn't agree.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. I'm not going to agree to let him bring in evidence. And he brought in new evidence. This wasn't even evidence he disclosed 6 months later. This is new undisclosed evidence. So there were several different misrepresentations made. I know I'm not going to have time to get through all of them, but I just described the deposition one. That was absolutely not in agreement. I didn't even know there were going to be disclosures. She just handed me a stack and said, this is some of the documents that I thought might be relevant. Your Honor, he talked about JRAT and about how that stipulated. Here's the page from the stipulated judgment. It specifically outlines amounts relative to each of the six lots, and the amount the court awarded to them was the exact figure. So that figure absolutely unequivocally comes from the stipulation. I didn't make that up, Your Honors. And the counsel argued I needed to object to it. He didn't file a motion. He didn't make any disclosures. He submitted a fugitive stipulation. I looked at it. And by the way, Your Honors, we were not served with the order. I did receive a copy of the proposed stipulated judgment. I immediately researched the rules. There's a district court local rule that says until the stipulation is signed, it's null and void. It means nothing. What am I going to file? I waited until the district court. I was shocked when I saw he included the order of the judgment after what he said in his summary judgment order. And I filed an appeal, which I have every right to. And that was the process and procedure of that. So I don't think there's any question whatsoever that the JRAT judgment, there was no motion filed on that. There was absolutely zero adjudication on any of the monies associated with that judgment. They just submitted a stipulation. It could have been just right after they filed the complaint.
All right. You're out of time, and we are being fair with time, so I don't want one party to get more than the other.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. Thank you for your arguments.